All right. The Shrem Show. Woo. We just finished watching 7. I got my special friend over here. His name is B, because we got our own little John Doe over here, who shall remain nameless and going under the pseudonym B.
I'm actually not going to go talk until the very end of the podcast and then just reveal myself.
Yeah, so I'm going to cut this in post.
This is
going to be cut because you already broke the rule.
Well, what are we going to do for an hour?
I don't know.
So now we have to like actually have a conversation?
Yeah. And this talk feels about, like a kid show.
this is terrible. This is a terrible way to start a kid show. Sit down, have them watch 7.
Yeah, by the way, that's a pretty messed up
terrible thing.
Children's programming.
I'm gonna watch the first 6. Thanks for providing a laugh with that. That would be really awkward. Like, I thought about making that joke and I went, yeah, you know, I trust him. I trust him, he's a good friend. And he'll give me something.
Wait, in The Boys, is it 6 or 7? It's the 6?
The show of The Boys?
Yeah. Is it the 7? The 7 deadly sins? Maybe all of them are different deadly sins.
I feel like 7 is pretty... maybe? I don't feel like we're grasping at straws here, but I don't think we're on the money, per se.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Anyways, we just finished watching the 7.
The seven movies.
We just finished watching 7.
7 times.
By David Fincher.
49
with times. Morgan Freeman, one of the best.
Yes.
And Brad Pitt, absolutely. One of the best.
Mm-hmm.
And what were your first thoughts?
Well, my first thoughts is I've seen it years ago, but I haven't seen it in about 15, 16 years. Yeah, my father showed it to me really, really young, so I grew up perfectly. But that's where I needed the chuckle. I needed like a little, like, you know, no, squeeze it out of you.
Man's telling me with the laugh. Okay.
Oh man. But, impressions, I noticed a lot of things that I didn't before. And I actually noticed a lot of David Fincher's films as he leaves a lot of Easter eggs and, you know, a lot of cute clues, you know, really rewards the viewers that, you know, pay attention to, you know, second viewing. So, I mean, he has one of those movies where every movie that you rewatch again, your score is going to bump up.
Yeah. The rewatchability on this is definitely there. I mean, same with you. I watched it when I was a kid. Probably shouldn't have. And I remember not really grasping a lot of the ideas with the 7 Deadly Sins, like, whole lore. Like, I didn't know what Dante's Inferno was.
No.
Girl, like, at the age of 10, like, you know.
Sound like a cartoon, yeah.
Exactly. So the rewatchability on it was great for that purpose. The fact that I got older and I understood more of the ideas or philosophy behind it. Also, I knew what happened at the end of it. So seeing the Easter eggs and the, what is it, the, like, the foreshadowing of the impending what's in the box situation was pretty interesting, to say the least.
Yeah. Yeah, by the way, is there a spoiler? Do we put spoiler warnings on
this? Yeah, if you're listening to this, you've already watched this movie, and if not, then don't listen to this podcast, and you've already known that at this point.
It's terrible advertising. So, we're doing great.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah, yeah, I will say, yeah, because you and I were watching it, and clearly we know what has, I mean, it's one of those most famous, even though if you haven't seen the movie, you know what's already happening. However, I will say, we saw, every time she popped up on screen, we're trying to look for clues and stuff.
Yeah.
And we saw one clue where she invited Detective over for dinner. And she was prepping dinner in the kitchen, that little area, in this little window, and her head was in a box and just chills down my spine.
Yeah, there was like a little box in the kitchen to see what's going on in there. Me and you just looked at it and go, like, oh, foreshadow.
Check. Symbolism.
Yeah, we were like, okay. Also, when he was talking with the lawyer, with John Doe's lawyer, we were looking at it and we're like, he kept saying, I want you to see it. I want you to see it. But every time he said it, he was looking directly at Brad Pitt.
Yeah. Yeah, and that was at the end. At the beginning, also, in the beginning, yes.
Say that, yeah.
All right. Yeah, at the beginning, when the seven deadly sins were revealed and it's, you know, being listed one by one, the last sin was, you know, revealed, or when he said it, Morgan Freeman, he said it to Brad Pitt's character. He said it directly to him. Nothing.
Envy,
he,
right?
Yeah, envy.
Yeah.
So envy, bam, eyes locked in, and we're like, okay, there you go. That's perfect. You know, it does actually speak to, you know, such good direction that he has, where he guides his actors really, really well. I think that he does a great job of, you know, making them seem natural. Because a lot of times in movies, when, you know, try to like force someone to say a line in a certain place, I mean, it's acting, but I feel like it's kind of like a play. It's really very performance, but
well, definitely, yeah.
Yeah, there. I mean, it may just speak to
those foreshadowing is definitely, the foreshadowing is definitely on the director, because the set pieces, you have to be able to understand the chronological thing, because they're not filming chronologically. Mm-hmm. And on top of all that, you have to be able to give these subtle things. So unless it's saying in the script, when you say envy, nod towards Brad Pitt's character, which it probably didn't say that in the script.
Mm-hmm.
That's on the director to tell, hey, Morgan Freeman, look at Brad Pitt when you say envy.
Yeah. And also, yeah, you know, to add on to that, it's yeah, good job to Brad and Morgan. Like, yeah, I know their first names. Like, I've been hanging out. But
the boys.
The boys. But, you know, they seem so natural. They have, you know, such good camaraderie between them. So they can land those lines without having it seem so specific. You know, it's not like he turned over and made direct eye contact. It was just so natural. And, you know, natural. And he landed, you know, his mark perfectly.
Yeah. I feel like he didn't have to direct Kevin Spacey all that much on being a creep, because he's already one.
Yeah. He just
nailed
that part.
Yeah, he nailed that part. And I feel like that's always his character.
Really?
So.
He's still in character?
Yeah, he's always playing the perfect creep. Yeah. I wonder why. Yeah,
incredible actor.
Incredible acting, quote unquote.
Oh my God.
Wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
Oh God.
If you don't get that, you're living under a rock, people.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And also,
but that's that you said that perfectly. That villain reveal.
Yeah.
That was.
Yeah, that's one of my
favorite. Immaculate
villain reveals. They're chasing him down the entire time. He shows up bloody, you know, just casual detective, and then scream detective like, and gets the entire. He gets the entire room. He gets the entire theater. You know, this was what, 1995?
95, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So this is shortly before we were born. I mean, I would love to just see this in theaters. I wonder what it would be like just to sit there and just feel it. I feel like the air would get sucked out of the room. It's very stagnant. Yeah. I would love, it's one of those theater moments that, you know, it's
funny.
Wish I had.
I remember a weird clip from The Butterfly Effect where one of the kids is, he goes back in the time item or whatever. Yep. He goes back in his past, and they're watching Seven in theaters.
Oh,
yeah. I don't know why that made me think of that. So off topic, but I'm like, great movie. First of all.
Yeah.
I like Ashton Kutcher in that movie is great.
Yeah.
But that was a villain reveal of a lifetime.
Oh yeah.
And the fact that he's in the staircase taking photos of Brad Pitt, and then later on, you see his photograph from the red room.
Yeah.
And you see all those things. You're like, oh my God, he's been in front of their faces several times, like a couple of times before they actually they get him or whatever, or he confesses. So crazy. What a cat and mouse. It's a perfect cat and mouse movie.
Yeah.
It reminds me in a sense of The Departed for different reasons. I feel like I tend to love cat and mouse movies where it's somebody going after somebody else and they're playing each other and it's perfect.
Yeah.
I love those.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I would say this one is more one-sided.
Yeah.
Where, you know, yes, he is playing with the detectives 100%.
But we only see their point of view.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was stated that he was showing off, in a sense, but it was more so out of
Yeah, because he had the photos of the guy from a year in advance.
Yeah, yeah, he was showing up. Yeah. But even in the phone call, he just you just hear it in his voice, you know, his character, you know, Brad Pitt's character afterwards. He just said, yeah, he's definitely, you know, very proud of what he did. So, yeah, there definitely is a cat and mouse game over there. But it's not so like, oh, you can't catch me. It's just, this is the work, and I'm so proud of this work, and that's kind of the cat.
The driving.
Yeah, and that, and, you know, the other side would be the mouse, so.
It's interesting because this also happens to be a film where the villain wins. He won.
Yeah.
He got exactly what he looked for.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of crazy because a lot of these films, you're always rooting for the heroes, obviously. And even though you're kind of ending the movie with, oh, there's closure. Okay, cool. No, the villain won. Like, there's something unsettling about that ending.
Yeah.
And I think that's so interesting.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, it's
not a lot of films are able to take that like risk of like, all right, villain won.
Yeah, yeah. You know, as long as they close the story, I know that's obvious to say, I'm okay without closure. You know, from like another character or if I don't really understand it, it's okay with being ambiguous. At least to myself, I'm okay with that. I can think about it. You know, I can Google a little bit and then, you know, think about it on my own. I like to figure it out a little bit more myself before delving into, you know, articles and stuff like that. But a lot of films I find have difficulty finishing or answering the questions that they set up. Because you can have really intriguing questions, but, you know, they don't really quite answer it or satisfy all the points or really allude to it. And David Fincher, he just doesn't not do that. He delivers every time.
Yeah, I feel like he pretty much answers a lot of he answers the necessary questions.
Yeah.
And leaves out he leaves out just enough for you to keep watching the movie over and over again to see, oh, did I miss that? Oh, did he know this? Mm-hmm. You know, I find that the rewatchability on a movie like this is good.
Yeah.
And I think he does that awesome in this, and I think he did it phenomenal in Fight Club.
Yeah.
You could rewatch Fight Club like every single day. That's like one of those, like Goodfellas as well.
You know what's also rewatchable about him? He is very, he delivers information and exposition where just, you know, people are just talking in a room very well. It's not just, you know, one person has a conversation and then, you know, the other person answers and then you kind of wait for the next scene where hopefully something will be exciting. In the scene, you know, the way he shoots people, the way he, you know, cuts the camera, pushes up, you know, or, you know, pulls back. He does a really good job. I mean, you know, take note of it. Next time you watch a Fincher film, just notice how those, you know, everyday talking scenes are actually just a bit more interesting.
Oh, I totally noticed that. So one of the scenes I noticed that in was in the car driving up to the last two sins. I was wondering to myself, whenever he had Brad Pitt talk or he had John Doe's character talk, it was behind the grating in the car. So behind the cage. Mm-hmm. I was wondering, what was the purpose of Fincher filming? Because obviously you could film Brad Pitt talking without the cage being in front of you. And you could do the same with John Doe. So I was wondering about it. And while I was watching the movie, that separation idea of prisoner to detective needs to be there.
Yeah.
And you could do that well with the cage behind each one. And the real question there that I think he was alluding to, or I'm looking too much into this, is who is behind the cage? At that point in the movie, mm-hmm. you think John Doe is in the cage with the detectives in charge. They have the upper hand.
Yeah.
In reality, it was John Doe was the one looking at Brad Pitt and Morgan Freeman in the cage he created. So I think it's just very interesting how he didn't do it like when Brad Pitt was talking to John Doe,
mm-hmm.
it was from the viewpoint of the cage. Like the cage was first and then Brad Pitt.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, it reflects him. It kind of reminds me of Watchmen, and this isn't too much of a spoiler.
I love that movie.
Oh God, you know when Rorschach goes to prison,
and
then the prisoners gang up on him, and then Rorschach gets the better hand, and I can't even begin. First of all, I don't have the lung, or I can't rip out my vocal cords to use his voice, but he says, you know, when are you gonna realize that I'm not locked in here with you. You're locked in here with me.
Yeah, wow. No, that really embodies this John Doe character.
Yeah, yeah.
He knows what he's doing from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
He knew from a year in advance. Now, I think his plan had to get sped up because of the fact that they found his lair, in a sense,
mm-hmm.
he didn't expect. But it didn't stop him, and this guy's IQ has to be out the wazoo.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I think that this movie happens to be first impression, like getting older, it is one of the most grittiest films I've ever watched in my life. There's no other film I've ever watched where it's as gritty as this. I mean, I've heard Requiem for a Dream is very much like that.
Yeah.
Very excited to watch that. Mm-hmm. Haven't seen it yet. But as of now, it's way more gritty than Fight Club, but Fincher is great with making that gritty noir vibe.
Yes,
and
yes.
We were talking about the word noir
yes.
mid-movie. Is that like a term people just use every day now?
Well,
noir.
We mentioned that noir, it just feels good to say, like you feel good saying it.
It makes you feel like a
higher
film.
Class.
Yeah.
I mentioned, you know,
film buff.
Yeah, like even just look at her, like wrists are kind of just like presenting the war. It felt like a glass of whiskey.
Noir.
Yeah.
Noir.
Just, yeah. You know, I don't even smoke, but like I would love to just have a lit
cigar.
Cigar.
With a whiskey.
Yeah. Just.
What are you doing this weekend?
Mm.
I'm watching a noir film.
You don't say.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, quite indubitably.
Noirs are great.
Just
amazing.
Yeah. By the way, this is coming from a guy who probably does not understand the definition of what a noir film is.
Please don't take any of her advice. Probably going forward.
Okay. Who was your favorite actor in this movie? And why?
Oh, it's two-part.
And
oh, my God.
And why?
Show your work.
And why?
Boom. I'm gonna split the question, or I'm gonna say what's more interesting to me is my favorite, the dynamic between them, because it's a toss up between Brad Pitt and Morgan Freeman. But my favorite part or my favorite character is just them together. They really juxtapose each other. You know, one veteran takes his time, very slow. The other one, very trigger friendly. Wink, wink.
Okay.
Towards the end of the film.
I got your joke.
You just didn't, you know what I mean? Like, you looked at me and you know, you frowned, but I really need like a solid.
No, I nodded.
De Niro frown where like, you know how like you truly a deep understanding. There you go. Your eyes like flip upside down.
For people that obviously can't see because there's no camera,
yeah.
I did my famous De Niro face.
There it is.
That no one's ever seen,
that
so it's not so famous.
Deprived of. Yeah.
I can't do an impression of him. But I can make his face to a T.
He's crushing it right now. I just want to let you know. Just
you talking to me? It's nobody else.
You're missing a lot.
We just watched Goodfellas like two movies ago. Okay, but now if you could choose one of those actors when they were solo, who was better?
Well, this sucks. I'd say I'm more gravitated towards Brad Pitt's character for the fact that I'm very interested to see if he's going to go explode at any single moment. He can kind of go off the rails. He's kind of indecisive, and that can take the movie in every which direction. If you have a character,
he's an everyman.
Yeah, yeah. If you have someone that's you know very stoic and grounded, you can kind of maybe understand their intentions a little bit more and understand that the scenes are gonna sequentially gonna flow about the same. But if you have, you know, a monkey wrench in every scene or like a powder keg, you know, the film can go any place. So
yeah,
that is kind of interesting to me. I do like that.
Yeah, I definitely gravitated more towards Brad Pitt's character. And I'm going to tell you why. The scene that did it for me with his acting was obviously what's in the box. You know, it's such an overplayed scene that mm-hmm. you almost, whenever you see it, you don't feel the gravitation of that emotion.
Yeah.
But rewatching it mm-hmm. and getting into the character, into the movie, and watching it not from a scene randomly mm-hmm. on the internet or whatever,
yep.
but getting into the character, his indecisiveness of letting him win versus killing him for doing that horrible thing to him. He makes you feel that.
Yeah.
And that scene where he's what's in the box and his going from shooting him to looking down to shooting him to looking down really makes you question what yeah. this man is going through. And I think that that was seen like Morgan Freeman wasn't able to have a scene where he was doing something like that. And I think that's the difference in the acting was obviously Morgan Freeman's a phenomenal actor. Yeah. I just think that they gave Brad Pitt more meat on his bones to work with.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the specific scene, you could just see it. I'm not even going to tell you exactly where, but you could just see him swallow just that, you know, he's faced with that decision. He knows he's faced with that decision. That thought comes to him. And then you just see him internalize all of that. And he has no idea what to do, but just break down. And then the decision comes clear to him. And like I said, you know, he is just a, you know, he's a powder keg. You know, he's very trigger friendly per se in his personality and, you know, dot, dot, dot.
I have a good question for you.
Go for it.
Okay.
Go for it.
If you were one of the seven deadly sins, which one would you be?
Oh, if I'm the...
If you were one of them...
Like I had to go... I had to
introspectively, look upon yourself and tell me which deadly sin you'd be.
Oh, okay, so I'm not like facing the character's fate. You're just telling which one...
Yeah, Yeah. Because no one wants lust. God, I'll tell you that much.
I'm good. I'll take... what would I be? Wouldn't say it's lust. I wouldn't say it's greed. You know, kind of like Vince Vaughn when he says in Dodgeball, you know, if you don't have a goal or something, you can't, you know, you can't miss your mark. So I wouldn't say I have no goals in life. This is
so greed. He's definitely not greed.
Cool. So I'm just trying to stay safe here. okay. What do I have?
He's not lustful. Women. Even though you don't know his name because he's a John Doe.
I wouldn't say I'm lustful, though. I am... I don't have the words for that one, though. What am I? I am... You know, I might be... Clueless. That's what I am. I'm just...
Oh, Clueless. Yeah, that was the eighth one.
There's an asterisk. Clueless.
Like the movie or like the... Oh, just in general.
Just in general.
Not the movie. Okay.
Yeah.
Gosh.
I know. I think the one that would be the most, I think, envy. As much as I don't find myself a jealous person, but I do find myself.
That surprises me.
Yeah, yeah. But if I'm honest with myself, you know, I think we all measure ourselves through other people's eyes.
Ooh.
So technically that it might be envious. You know, if you want to be above someone, then, or if you want to get to a certain place and that's your reference point, it's kind of hard if you're truly looking into yourself to see that there might just be a bit of envy in there. At least this is the answer that's coming to me at the moment.
Wow.
Yeah.
I like food, so I'm just gonna say. I like food. I don't know.
That's such an easy out. I could come up with a joke. Are you kidding me? Holy shit! I could come up with seven jokes in 7 seconds. I have to search within inside my soul and just confess this.
Hey, listen, I never told you to give this I did tell you to go introspectively into yourself. Oh, God. No, I mean, listen, I definitely think that I'm gluttony for not just because I eat. I think that when I indulge in things, I fully indulge in them.
Yeah, I'm very black and white I
love the enjoyment. And if I see a benefit from it, mm-hmm. I totally want to get I go for the extreme benefit of that thing.
That makes sense.
And is it a problem? Yeah, but, you know, I'm working on myself every day.
I feel like a lot of people.
Everything in moderation, I've been learning. I've been learning that idea of everything in moderation. And I think that's been helping me get to a place of healthy lifestyle, whether it's food, whether it's doing activities. Mm-hmm. going out every single night is too much. Even though, is it fun to do? Yeah, it's hella fun to go out. Sounds exhausting. You
know? Hell yeah.
Yeah, but it's fun to go out and do all those things. But it is taxing on you.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah.
That's one of those phrases. I love that phrase, too, because that's something that you can just tack onto a conversation if you kind of don't know how. No, this not in this conversation. You're doing great.
What are you telling me right now?
What are you trying to say?
What are you trying to say?
I don't know. There's just these phrases that I find myself
taxing?
Saying. Not just taxing, just anything. Like, you know. Fuck, now I'm just drawing a blank. You know, just like, you know,
on whatever, the spot, think of it. Go.
Whatever floats your boat. Like, I just find myself saying these phrases in conversations just to tie a nice bow around. I'm like, I don't need to have these
different strokes with different folks.
You know what I mean? Just put one foot in front of the other. You know, just take your time. Hey, you know, who's to say? I say that all the time. I don't know where that comes from.
God bless, you know?
God bless. That's not
me like, over here doesn't like it if he said God bless.
No, because I just ask because
somebody we were talking to instinctively, he goes, how is your day? He goes, instinctively, he just goes, God bless.
That's
and you got angry.
How you have a conversation with someone. How's your weekend? God bless. God bless what? Were you almost hit by a bus? Was your village about to be raided? Like what? What required a God bless?
He just meant to say it was a good day.
Just say it's a good day. Yeah, it's good. That's fine. You could just say that. Give me that Pete Davis. Yeah, it's fine. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, our life isn't special. Just it goes on and on. It's fine. You know, it's another mundane weekend. I don't know, Brandon.
You got like these weird things, you know, different strokes that you get angry for.
Maybe
you're wrath. Maybe that's what you are.
Fine. See, it's coming a bit more. You know what it is? Maybe like 2 weeks, like 3 weeks ago. And this is nothing my take on religion. None of that. We can just put a parenthesis around that. It's just socially or it was just. I called up customer service a couple weeks ago, and you know, just off the gate, I'm like, how's it going? She's like, God is good. I'm like, I don't.
Okay, I mean, listen, God is good. It's a little different than God bless.
That's true, but I feel like that
one you thought about. That one you were like. Somebody's going to ask me how my day is going, and every time they ask me, I'm going to go, God is great.
That's what she said.
With this, it was God
customer
is
service. Is, yeah, I just finally got someone on the phone.
That's Kathy like, from Oklahoma. Definitely.
Oh, my God. He's just like, what can I do for you? I'm like, how are you? God is good, you know? She said, you know. And then, again, it would be nice to have one of those phrases, you know, like, yeah, go with the flow, you know?
go with the flow.
Yeah.
Hey, listen, different strokes for different folks. That's my favorite one. I say that all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I always find myself getting into an issue with somebody, mm-hmm. and they always just want to go with their own idea. And then I'll just be like, I'm not fighting this battle. All right, different strokes for different folks. And for some reason, 9 out of 10 times, they go, I mean, yeah, you're right. Yeah, sure. And I'm like, yes, I got out of that one. Scot-free.
It's so general. It doesn't apply to anything.
It means nothing.
You can't just.
It's that agree to disagree statement.
If you, when you know, you know.
If you agree to disagree, then nothing changed.
Yeah. It's kind of like when someone says, maybe yes, maybe no. Just say maybe. It's, what are you splitting hair? It's just, you're good.
The glass half full mentality over here.
Yeah. I did notice recently that when someone says, if you're up for something or if you're down for something, it means the same thing. You want to hang out? Yeah, I'm down. Or you want to hang out? Yeah, I'm up for it.
I had a question for you. What was your favorite scene of the entire movie?
I mean, the box scene is iconic. That probably stands out. But
ooh, that was your favorite?
One scene. I think that's my favorite, but I'd like to tack this on. I think the scene that stood out to me the most is Morgan. Is the dinner scene. And I know that really wasn't like such a heavy scene or nothing seemed like too much happened. But again, we're talking about characters where Morgan Freeman's characters are very controlled. He doesn't really seem too excited by everyday thing. Brad Pitt, you know, a dog could, you know, he's playing with dogs on the floor. That's amazing. But the thing about it is Morgan Freeman laughed. And I that just shows a testament or, you know, to someone who doesn't really laugh as much. He's a big personality. And some people, and not to say that, you know, one, someone who radiates, you know, a lot of happiness is, you know, either better or worse, but some people don't as much. So when you finally get that laughter, it's a big thing. You know, you could just tell he holds the room, really, because, you know, it wasn't even a funny joke. He laughs, and then both, you know, Gwyneth and Pitt just, you know, the entire room explodes. I mean, Gwyneth really changes
the Gwyneth room. Killed it for the few scenes she was in. I think what was awesome about that scene too, going off what you're saying right now, mm-hmm. is there was such a human aspect to it.
Yeah.
We're living in a Fincher world of grit, mm-hmm. disgusting, everyone's immoral, everyone's a murderer, everyone's a killer, and then you get this dinner scene, mm-hmm. and there's a person who's real.
Yeah.
All three of them are real. And it's a breath of fresh air. You get to see a husband and a wife moving into a new town with a whole nother perspective to it, with boxes mm-hmm. everywhere because they just moved in. What a foreshadow.
Amazing.
And you get to humanize Morgan Freeman's character. Prior to that scene, they weren't they weren't fans of each other. So
No, it's great to just finally see them coming together. It's a buddy cop movie, really. It's a hilarious buddy cop movie.
Yes,
if you haven't noticed, it's a major undertone that you'll catch there.
Yeah, totally. For that one scene in about 5 minutes out of a 2 hour long movie.
Yeah, but absolutely. I mean, there are people that, you know, I've seen or know that, you know, really, if they radiate some sort of, they have such a heavy presence. So when they laugh, the room laughs. When they don't, they can bring the room in, like, dampen it down. Not in, you know, an unhappy way. Not that's better or worse, but it can definitely change the tone. So you can just definitely tell, you know, how revered he was amongst the detective, how, you know, quote unquote, veteran he was.
Yeah.
And, you know, it just plays throughout the dinner table how they, you know, see this man as being, you know, such a revered man. And, you know, when they laugh, when he laughs, everyone laughs.
When you smile, the world smiles with you.
Amazing. The sun is shining. I don't know where I was going with that.
Different shows for another.
Different show.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Look, when you know, you know.
When you know, you know.
When you know, you know. Just go with the flow.
That's great. Mm-hmm. I think it was interesting to see that Kevin Spacey's name wasn't in the opening credits. Mm-hmm. And I found that insane. That Fincher was able to do that and keep the mystery of who this person, this killer is.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because the first thing I do when I hear about a new movie, go right to IMDb. I go right to the acting. I go, who's in this movie? Is it going to be interesting? Is it going to be big actors? And to keep that a secret, I think was awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. They did a good job. Also believe he didn't go on, you know, clearly didn't do any press as well.
Oh.
So that is pretty well. I mean, it's 1995. So, of course, you know, it is, you know, pretty difficult to keep it a secret. But, you know, those kinds of reveals can't happen today.
No.
Yeah. I mean, also just the speculation around movies is most of the advertisements. Yeah. It's not trailers.
Like, even when Spider-Man came out, what was it? The,
the third one.
Yeah, what was the third one called? No Way Home, no? It was Homecoming, and then it was Far From Home,
and then No Way Home. Crush it the first time, yeah.
Yeah. You're like, why are you doubting yourself?
First try, don't even, yeah.
Come on.
Mm-hmm. When you know, you know. It's hard to stop saying.
Yeah. So I think when Tobey Maguire was rumored to be on it, it's like, bro, there were photos of him at the airport, yep. and people were like religiously trying to find out who was going to make an appearance. Already the Deadpool thing's ruined.
Mm-hmm.
No, what are they having Wolverine or something?
Oh yeah,
But why can't they just keep this stuff a secret?
Everyone has a phone and a camera.
It's just so annoying. That's the thing about Deadpool from the beginning that I didn't like. I'm going on a tangent. I don't even care right now. I don't watch trailers. I got sick and tired of trailers, and Deadpool 1 was the reason I stopped watching trailers.
Oh, that was your, that was it?
That was the prime, I'm done with trailers reason. I watched that trailer, and then I watched the movie, and I go, huh, that's funny. I think I laughed more at the trailer than I did, because by the way, for that movie, they had 17 trailers.
Yeah.
I watched all the trailers. I was such a fanboy back in the day with, oh, I want to go look into the theories and the what's going to happen and all that. And then I realized I'm just ruining the film for myself when I watch these things. My idea is if I know I'm going to go see the movie, there's no point in watching a trailer.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, and also, you know,
I know I'm going to watch that Scorsese movie, the one with Leo and that new one, whatever, right?
Mm-hmm.
I do not need to watch a trailer to convince me to watch a movie I already know I'm going to watch.
Yep.
Yeah. And they ruin half the stuff they ruin.
It's not even about watching. You need to play active defense just to keep spoilers
down
from. Yeah. Yeah. It's crazy. Unbelievable just to actually. Yeah. It's not even.
Trailer, and then you go on YouTube and you watch a breakdown of the trailer and you're like, what the hell am I doing?
Even if you're on YouTube and you're not Googling it, you get like a thumbnail. And then the title description.
Also, they could get. By the way, like Marvel tried to make a trailer where they had, I think, Hulk in one of the Avengers Endgame or one of those movies. They had Hulk in one of the fight scenes in the trailer.
Yeah,
and then that never happened because we know what happened with Hulk.
Were they running it all in slow motion in the forest?
They got sued for that.
Really?
Yeah.
Who's suing? Like who?
Because for false advertisement.
Yeah, but spoiler. Every friend that I know, just like, did you watch the trailer? They don't even ask me. They already know.
Yeah, it's like, what? Yeah. I have so many friends that are like, oh, Elliot, here we go again with his trailer talk.
But I wouldn't mind watching the first 10 seconds. That's what I do. Just to like get the tone, the feeling. The first 10 seconds can capture.
No. Even if I see an actor, like I'm like, oh, Brad Pitt's going to be in this movie? All right, I'll watch it. Margot Robbie's in that? I'll watch it. Like, that's it.
Yeah.
It takes like, oh, this actor, oh, that director's doing it. Like, recently, by recently, I mean like last night, I watched that Wes Anderson short film with Benedict Cumberbatch. Literally just came out.
I don't know. What? Tell me. Fill me in.
Basically, it's just a short film about a Roald Dahl book. I don't know if I'm pronouncing his name correct, but I'm pretty sure it's the guy that did BFG and Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So he made the short little film. I'm not a Wes Anderson fan.
Really?
I'm not.
Oh, he's great.
Personally.
Him and Fincher are just, you know, they're so similar. They're almost indistinguishable.
Except for the fact that Fincher has linear stories. That make coherent sense.
Yes.
Where Wes Anderson has 17 people talking at you, expecting you to know what's going on, while 17 things are moving in the background. And even though it's a beautiful shot, I have no idea what just happened. And the fact that it's pleasing for my eyes.
Yeah.
The fact that it's pleasing for my eyes. Does not take out the fact that I still have no idea what the Grand Budapest Hotel was about at all.
You need like video game, like periphery just to watch a Wes Anderson
movie. What's more confusing? Tenet by Christopher Nolan or the Grand Budapest Hotel by Wes Anderson? I don't know. I wish we could get a director who was able to do a film like Nolan with the narrative of like Tarantino. Like that would be insane.
That would be insane. I think that's a sensory overload. That is.
No, that would just be like a movie.
That's just repeated violence. Nolan's, you know.
No, I'm talking the narrative of like Nolan. So like the conversational aspect of like Jules and Vince talking in a.
So you want.
In a normal Tarantino's way.
Dialogue with.
Like Nolan's a Nolan-esque film. Imagine Batman, but like people actually had normal conversations. Yeah. And people didn't just talk like this. And every word they said mattered, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, but sometimes, I mean,
but yes. Don't you think if I wanted to go to 407 Broadway Street that I needed to be there? And then like three scenes later, he's at 407 Broadway Street and you're like, oh, that's why he said that.
Yep. That's
why I like Tarantino. He has real conversations about like burgers from Amsterdam or something.
I love that. I love, actually, that's why I like Richard Linklater. He has some of the best films for me, right now, when I say for me, it's like I'm in a space where I enjoy that because it's two people hanging out in a room talking. It's just, he really captures that.
What movies has he done?
Dazed and Confused, Everybody Wants Some. Those are just where you just hang out, you relax. You relax as an audience, but they relax and they're just talking. It's just fun to see just a little slice of life.
Well, as I'm saying this, I'm realizing that a guy who's kind of doing that thing that I literally just described is Matthew Vaughn.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like he's been killing it with those Kingsman franchise. I think those are very good with those. Okay, let's have a normal conversation, but also let's keep that high octane fun.
Yes, yes.
Going.
It's normal conversation. Yeah, and it's put on this.
Yeah. He has a new film coming out, I think, with Henry Cavill. Cable?
Cavill.
Evil Knievel?
Good dots. Yeah, it's Cumberbatch.
Cumberbatch. That's how you spell it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Dude.
Good to know.
This movie was awesome.
I am
awesome the second time around, honestly. I know it was a quick pivot to say that, but like, just thinking about it, because I'm thinking in my head, I'm like, dude. There's a reason 7 was in the top 20.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's one of those films that still stay with me. We're talking about it. But it's one of those, like tomorrow, my day will be dampened just a little bit, maybe by just all the rain that you're just watching it. But yeah, it's such a heavy movie but he does a great job of making you feel things without you even realizing it or being too aware of it. He does a great job. If you ever just like pause the movie, just take note of how you feel. You're like, wow, I'm in this space, in this place that's just, I did not expect to be here. He does a great job of making you feel things.
Yeah, and I feel like you sometimes could get too lost in the gritty look of films.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny because I think I brought this up while we were watching the film, and I'm like, I don't understand how people even got this film this high, because how many people watch this film and were just like, okay, that's a little too gritty for me. I got to turn this off. But it stands to show, no, this movie is so much more than just that grit.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's got a story that's compelling.
Interesting.
It's got a story with great acting behind it.
Yep. I mean, I would say it also has, it's one of those things that I love how you won't really tell what scene comes next in the movie. It's not a predictable movie.
Not at all.
It doesn't go by the books. It's not cookie cutter. And you know, mixture. It makes you.
I think it's awesome where you can have a film that is able to give you exactly what you're looking for with his own style to it. Because that's Fincher's style.
Yeah.
Fincher's style is, I want you to believe that this world is a horrible place.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know what? Yeah. And
that's that line at the end. The line at the end of the movie was perfectly the exact definition that I think Fincher lives his life by, which is Ernest Hemingway said that life is, what do you say? Life is beautiful and it's worth fighting for.
Yeah.
But Morgan Freeman's character said, but I believe in the second one.
Part. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Wow. How did I remember that? But
stays with you.
Yeah, exactly. Because it stays with you. It's an awesome line.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that Fincher lives his life with that exact idea. Fighting for it is the most important part. It doesn't matter about that first part.
Mm-hmm.
That first part doesn't matter.
Yeah.
It's that second part that does.
It is great. I would love to see, you know, like any sort of, and tell me if you're interested in this too, to see any sort of like regular cookie cutter movie, you know, some Netflix movie that you'll forget, you know, 2 days after it comes out. Take that movie, copy and paste it into a Fincher, a Tarantino, a Nolan. Like, what would they do with that movie? It's, you know, just they can keep the movie about the same, but it's, wouldn't you be more interested in seeing it? Because style goes a long way.
Style does go a long way. And I think that the one thing growing up I didn't understand about movies was like, oh, such and such actor is in this movie. Oh, that's awesome. Mm-hmm. Until I got older, I realized, no, I want to see a movie because of the director. The style of the director is phenomenal.
Yeah.
And that, to me now, is the biggest proponent of why I go see a movie.
Yeah.
If Tarantino is coming out with a movie, I'm there opening night.
Yep.
If Scorsese is opening a movie, I'm seeing it that week. Mm-hmm. Nolan, too. It's these heavy hitters that are coming in, and they're making names for themselves. Matthew Vaughn, another Matthew one. Vaughn. He's great.
I think that, like I said it before, one of my favorite...
Greta Gerwig.
She's great. She's great, too. But the style of Fincher, yes, it has this dark overtone. And
but that takes time.
That takes time. That takes
this, the stylistic takes time. Mm-hmm. Only the greats, the great directors, knew their style from before.
Yeah. I'd say Guy Ritchie has an incredible style. You know, again, you can put them in a room. Watch King Arthur and just watch people come up with a scheme. Kind of like Soderbergh, that's also a great example of them planning the heist and, you know, scene to scene, and then they bring the information back. It has a great way of tying it all together. I'd say if you're looking for movies that do a great job of, you know, relaying information with style, watch Soderbergh, watch Guy Ritchie, watch Fincher for sure.
Well, have you seen Mindhunters?
I haven't. Oh, he did. I know he did that. I've not heard.
That was awesome. Well, I do like true crime, so it was awesome to see David Fincher kind of take these true crime, you know, people, turn them into characters on TV, and have people picking at their brain. I felt like it gave like a different second wind to these characters that I enjoyed a lot.
Yeah, it's also it's interesting to see it. You know, of a true story. You know. I could just imagine the people going through it like, oh, shit, that's David Fincher. He's directing me? That's
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So overall, I would say that this is definitely – first of all, I think it's the first horror movie on the top 200 – on the top 250.
Yes.
And I think it kind of ranks in right now at number 20. And I think it of the horror / thrillers, this killed it.
Yeah. Yeah, this also really leans into thriller more than the horror. It is horror, for sure. I mean, horror is definitely a broad definition, and it definitely hits it closer to the center on this one. But if one of your friends say, hey, what's a good thriller? Seven. Just say Seven. He does such a great job.
Great movie. Definitely worth it. Anyways, this has been the Shrem Show with my guest B over here.
Thank you for having me.
It was awesome. Awesome having him. And... we're just gonna sign off. I don't know. It's been awesome.
Is there a form to sign off or like sign out, or do we take the pass and leave?
It's great.
Absolutely.
All right, listen, whatever. Different strokes for different folks, man. What do you want from my life?
Look, I mean, when you know, damn, I need more white guy phrases. You know what I mean?
Yeah, what's another one?
Oh man. You know what it is? You can just...
The buck ends here?
The buck ends here. That's a good one. I don't
know what that means.
It just sounds like something that... It sounds... I don't know. But it just sounds... I think a president had it. Did Roosevelt have that?
Who the hell? Yeah, maybe. Who knows?
Yeah, I think he had it on his desk. Roosevelt. Yeah. Buck ends here. That's an interesting one. You know when someone says, like, oh, I'm under the weather? Or, like, you know, I have, like, a... You know, like, I have a... My stomach is acting up. You're like... You know, there's such a way to, like, you know... You know, like, just, like, people have a way with words.
Anyways, guys, this has been Seven with my guest, B. Mm-hmm. You can follow him at social media under B.
Just, you follow me
Twitter
on the
Apple / board. X at B. Just follow his podcast at B.
Yeah, you'll see me there.
Yeah. That's not him. You'll never find him. He's John Doe.
God.
He's I was about
this
to
is
make
the a, reveal. See, I was about to make along. A messed up joke.
All right, thanks, B, for coming in today. That was awesome.
Thank you.
You're awesome.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me. This is great.
This is great. Yeah, plan to have you on for more of these, hopefully.
Yeah, I
think they're coming out the 7 part 2.
Eight? It's such an obvious joke. I'm like,
it's called eight.
Eight. Prequel six.
But the real question was, what was one through six?
Sorry about it. That's just, those are the trailers.
Fincher goes,
those are the trailers.
Fincher just goes, don't worry about it, sweetheart.
There's six trailers. No, there's a teaser.
There's a teaser.
That's the first. There's two teasers.
A trailer one.
There's four trailers.
A red trailer.
A red trailer.
Anyways, this has been great. I'll have you on again.
And yes, I don't. Yeah,
yeah. Listen, I don't know.
Yeah. You look, when you know, you know. Oh, this is amazing. This is amazing.
All absolutely. Right. Peace. Thank bye, guys. Again, it's the Shrimp Show. Follow me. Subscribe. Rate. I don't know. Whatever the hell.
Do it. Do
Patreon,
it.
Patreon, if it's up. I don't think I made a Patreon yet, but if I did, check it out.
Send them anyway. Send them.
Peace.